This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I sat back there
and I listened to every word you said. Howard, every time you open your mouth, you should be arrested for air pollution. More trouble. You give me more trouble than my opponents. Now, like, I heard you were going to host the show, so I thought I would give you the honor of coming to talk with you. Now, what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk with you, first of all, about the fact that you would still be in impoverished anonymity in this country if I hadn't made you famous.
Now, listen.
I'm telling you, Cosell and Ali.
The best.
It was something else. 743. If there's a walking, talking sports historian and librarian in this country, let alone in the city of Chicago, it's Chet Coppock. Let's go to the library now. Good morning, Chester.
Hey, Champ. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing fine. What hit you when you heard Ali was gone?
A great sense of loss. An end of an era. Maybe a little loss of innocence. You know, Steve, when the Beatles invented Sullivan back in 64, that's the same year that a young Cassius Marcellus Clay stopped Sonny Liston when the heavyweight title. I had the good fortune to interview Muhammad three or four times over the years. And one quick anecdote that I think you'll get a kick out of. In 1973, I went to the London House to see Chubby Checker, you know, do the twist. I was only 13 years behind the times. But about halfway through the set, completely unannounced, who walks in and begins doing the twist and out-twisting Chubby Checker but Muhammad Ali?
There was a crowd, baby. Had to be there.
That's the happy side. See, the sad side for me is, you know, I think back to the third fight with Joe Frazier, which Muhammad described as the closest thing to death. I think back to him getting knocked down by Smoking Joe March 8th of 71 in the Garden. I think about Ken Norton breaking his jaw. I think about the heinous beating given to him by Larry Holmes. And I think we all have to take a step back and realize that Muhammad, as much as he perhaps did suffer from Parkinson's, basically was punchy. He just got hit too many times. He frequently trained without any type of headgear. There was an aura of invincibility about him. There was a very loving quality about him. We've lost Steve, as you well know. I'm going to have to tell you this, but we've lost a man who for two decades, perhaps three decades, was the best known man in the world.
Yep. The most famous athlete in the world, the most famous face in the world. And it really came around because, kids, you got to remember, way before the internet here, but when he went to Africa to fight Foreman, there's great film footage of this about the people of Africa in remote villages coming out to line dirt, mud-stained roads just to chant Ali's name. When you go, well, how do they even know he's in country? He was absolutely the most famous face in the world.
Chad, a lot of it, I think you alluded to the fact that he was hit a lot. And there was, in boxing back then, I mean, that was sort of the ability to take a punch carried a lot of weight, didn't it? I mean, we didn't know what we know today.
We didn't. Also, you know, it was a different time, Steve, and this may sound abstract, but for referees, it was a much different time. For example, if you go on YouTube and type in Emil Griffith against Benny Kid Perrette, you'll see Kid Perrette absorb 21 unanswered blows from Emil. He died. What transpired, the referee, who was a gentleman named Ruby Goldstein, very simply froze. I talked about the fight in Las Vegas with Larry Holmes in 1980. 10 wicked, vicious rounds in which Muhammad did nothing but absorb punches. You know, people at ringside were chanting, stop the fight. And I've always believed that the Ali corner, Angelo Dundee, wanted to stop the fight, but the black Muslims would not let him do so. And mind you, that as much effect as Angelo had on the career of Muhammad, the black Muslims were always in charge of what was transpiring with Ali. For example, when Ali refuses induction and he's no longer a breadwinner, a moneymaker for the black Muslims, who is the first guy who rejects him but Elijah Muhammad?
Yeah, well, he had a great break, right, from Malcolm X for that and for the reason of violence, because he did not believe the religion should encompass violence, and that was one of the great sadnesses as he went through the latter stages of his life, I think, as well. What about the giving side of Ali? What did you know of that, his charitable side? Because we've heard an awful lot about that this weekend.
You know, Steve, a remarkable ability to make people laugh, whether they were 5, 15, or 75. His desire to educate people about Parkinson's disease, his willingness to go out in public with the afflictions that he suffered and let people see what had transpired with him. He was a remarkable man of courage. Did he have a big ego? Of course he did. I mean, you can't be Muhammad Ali without a very, very big ego. And sure. By the way, much of his comedy material came from the mind of a man who admitted he wasn't the brightest guy in the world. But he did have this, he had this poetic ability. And, you know, think about it in these terms, Steve. How do you not link at all times Muhammad Ali with Howard Cosell? For example, you know, Howard saying to Ali, well, it appears, Muhammad, you're feeling very truculent. And Ali responds by saying, well, if that means good, you're right.
right. But I'm telling you, those wide world moments that we remember were unbelievable.
They were great. But, Chet, it didn't start out as a stand-up comedy bit with the two of them. I mean, Howard was a serious journalist starting out interviewing Ali. And along the way, I mean, they had their differences. But ultimately, I think they realized, didn't they, that they were each other's best friend in terms of what they could do for the other guy.
Steve, I believe they were like Lewis and Martin. You know, obviously Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin were not the best of friends, but they recognized that as a tandem, they could make a great deal of money, and they were very, very good and remarkably entertaining. I think the same thing might have been true to a degree with Cosell, although I do know this. I had the good fortune to emcee a couple of events with Howard back in the 1990s, and Howard's reverence for Muhammad Ali would almost move you to tears. And it broke my heart over the last 15, 20 years to see Muhammad in this weakened condition, because he was the man with the Ali shuffle. He was the man with the greatest left jab in the history of boxing. Here is a man who was such a brutal underdog that on the day he beat Liston in March of 1964, the physician who examined him the day of the fight said, and I quote, he's scared.
Right, that's my diagnosis.
Think about how big Muhammad Ali was without the benefit of social media.
Right.
If Ali fought today, I mean, Steve, ask yourself this question. When was the last time you went out of your way to watch a heavyweight fight?
Yeah, nobody. Nobody.
It's been 15 years.
No, well, I got to tell you, I believe great boxing died with Ali's career. I mean, even through the 80s and Tyson.
Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
Don King made it dirty, Arum made it dirty, and it just, you know, now it's just an afterthought. But there's really no way, Chet, and Dave, and you guys know this, to describe how big a deal a heavyweight bout was prior to 1980 and really prior to 1975. It was a stop-the-country moment.
Yeah, and
well,
remember,
Dave, Dave.
Yeah, it wasn't live either. Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, true.
And pay-per-view, Chet, pay-per-view isn't what it is today. I mean, you had to go to where, the amphitheater, or go to a theater to watch those fights?
Steve, I would go to the Aragon Ballroom, and the visuals were so bad, you weren't sure if you were watching Muhammad Ali or a Japanese film with subtitles. But it was Ali, and Dave, you know this as well as anybody does. Muhammad Ali didn't have fights. He had events.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. When Muhammad fought, it was an event. It galvanized people. I mean, there were people who vilified him. There were people who were in love with him. There was no middle ground with Cassius Marcellus Clay, this young man from Louisville who began to fight because he was going to whoop some boy who stole his bike. And, you know, Steve, one thing that has not been touched upon because of the political realm, but I think it has to be mentioned in this. You know, regarding Vietnam, regarding his refusal to accept induction, and I believe that, yes, he was sincere in his religious beliefs. I have never forgotten this statement from Ali. No Viet Cong ever called me N-word. That has stuck with me for 40 years.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't have a war with them. I'm not going to go over and kill them. Chet, great perspective as always. Nothing but the best, buddy. I appreciate you taking some time.
Hey, my good friend, listen, it's Cochran putting for Eagle here on 14.
Well, that's the kind of call I usually pay for.